I'm Stuart Astor. Welcome to a full-on Brain Caffeine audio snack podcast. As the Parisian cafe music fades away, let's think about the reality of the post-truth world, if indeed that's where we are. In this episode, I'm talking to John Scheel. John's an entrepreneur, amateur philosopher and political observer. He's a legally Irish, acceptably Scouse, ex-physicist. But none of that really matters. He knows how to get to the heart of a subject, or to walk all the way around it. Either and both. Anyway, John mentioned that he'd been thinking about fake news and conspiracy theories, and I had a few points I knew he'd help me to tackle in a high-caffeine podcast. So join me and John, who's on the other end of the line in a lockdown northwest of England with some noisy gardeners outside the window, so my apologies for the occasional poor sound quality behind John's dulcet tones. Enjoy this brain caffeine snack, which, with its length and intensity, must surely qualify as two strong Americanos with a very sugary cinnamon bun. Let's drop in.
Anyway, what are we going to talk about?
John, so now I've been having a little think about conspiracies. And so you said you've got an idea why you think that the right are particularly, let's not say susceptible, because I don't think that's fair, but that it fits somehow with their view of the world and their mindset about why it's the right. Let's just say, it's the right where it's the right where the vast majority of the conspiracy theories seem to be.
Yeah. well, it's well, before we get onto that, I mean, I think what I would say is, the term for it today is, of course, fake news, and Donald Trump is great at, who's always been someone, long before the term fake news was coined, Donald Trump has always been someone who's been absolutely brilliant at people talking about Donald Trump. He's always been good at it. When he was in New York in the 80s, building all these houses, the papers were talking about him every single day. I mean, Manhattan's not short of a few millionaires, right? But he was a guy who just always seemed to get the publicity, no matter what he was doing. He mattered. It was really important, and he just had this knack for saying things and doing things that newspapers wanted to write about, because newspapers want to write about interesting stuff and they need characters.
The days before clickbait,
yeah.
Even
he's like
all
a
about
walking
selling
clickbait.
Papers.
Yeah, he was always good at that. Jimmy Savile was always good at that as well, by the way.
Yeah, careful, because we don't want to get into that thing where we talk about Hitler within the first 90 seconds.
Just one thing on Jimmy Savile. I remember seeing him on Louis Theroux's program, and he broke his leg, I think, while they were out walking in the field. I can't remember exactly. He broke his ankle or something. And you'd think, like most people, the first call you make would be to an ambulance or the doctor or something like that. No. Jimmy Savile's instinct was to call his agent and get the newspapers to know that he'd sprained his ankle. So that's how Donald Trump would work. There have always been people like that. But fake news has been around for a very long time. I'll give you a couple of examples. I mean, there used to be a program, just actually a bit of an aside on this. There used to be a program called Face to Face. I don't know if people remember that. Going right back to a guy called John Freeman. John Freeman, very interesting guy. He used to be a Labour MP, and he was one of the old school. You don't really get, I'm not sure if you get many journalist MPs now in the old school where they were, they were proper journalists. They weren't like Boris Johnson, who's not really a journalist. He's more
a commentator, shall we say.
Opinion former, opinion writer. This was a proper hard-nosed journalist, editor of the New Statesman, and he had these programs called Face to Face, and you can see them on YouTube. And if you've never heard of Face to Face or seen Face to Face, you really ought to watch them, especially his interview with Martin Luther King, very very famous.
This is a proper journalist then, not one
proper,
that writes the
journalist.
Words
and,
that squirt out of his head and
yeah,
that's as far as
and,
it goes. Yeah.
And Face to Face is a cracking show because he really dug deep on his interviewees. Anyway, he said something about Richard Nixon, and I just looked it up, actually. I'll just read this from, this is from his Wikipedia page. In 1962, he described Richard Nixon, and see if anybody recognizes this description, and does it apply to any prominent American politician today? So in 1962, he described Richard Nixon, then bidding to become governor of California, as a man of no principle whatsoever, except a willingness to sacrifice everything in the cause of Dick Nixon. And today we have Donald Trump, who is, I think he's stopping short of sending the army in to stop the count in Pennsylvania.
Well, so far, getting
pretty close, But that's what he thought about Dick Nixon. And then he said Nixon was a discredited and outmoded purveyor of the irrational and inactive, whose 1964 defeat would be a victory for decency. So there's a, this was in 1964, and now we're in 2020. And, you know, those descriptions could apply to the Biden-Trump battle.
Sadly, apart from the fact that Trump doesn't seem to be outmoded, he still seems to be pretty fashionable. I think that's
but
you know what? I've noticed that nobody likes a loser, do they?
Nobody
and
likes a
the
loser.
People are running away
tell.
Pretty quickly from him.
There's not many people queuing up to defend Trump at the moment on from the
apart from his
Republican
children.
Side. That's that. But let's go back a bit further. The French Revolution. There was that general panic called the Great Fear, la Grande Peur, which took place between the 22nd of July and the 6th of August, 1789. And it was based because there was a grain shortage and there were rumours of the aristocrats having a famine plot to starve the population. Now, isn't that fake news? And that's from the 18th century.
Yeah, and rumours moved fast even in pre-revolutionary France, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
News travelled fast and, you know, sort of fake news travelled faster than the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it's almost impossible to imagine that happening, because I find it hard to imagine how we used to get our news before Twitter and the internet. And thinking back to that time, and now you just sort of think the speed with which these things, the time it takes me to refresh a page on the internet, and there's another story or another reinforcement out there. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think there's probably something, I mean, quite... Yeah, you get the philosophers out on this one, but I think the big battle in people's minds, well, it's all down to how they vote and how do people vote. And there's no general way of deciding how people vote. I mean, people vote for a particular candidate for however many reasons. But two of those reasons could be generalised as how they make you feel and what they think they're going to do for you. So I suppose there's... Yeah, I mean, there's the heart and the head, isn't there? Trump's very much a character who appeals to people's hearts. They know he's a bit, you know, off. They know he says outrageous things. But they don't mind that. They just know that when he says those outrageous things, they
I mean, in some way, Boris Johnson's almost a better example of that, because I think people aren't promoting him as a good candidate on his competence. You know,
exactly.
Nobody's ever said, vote for
Boris
Johnson, he's hugely competent, he'll do the job of running this country well. You know, what they're saying is, here's a guy we should vote for that should be in the thick of it, making things happen, not really making it happen in the sense of competence.
Well,
so, it's a good distinction.
And the supporters, what you find with these characters is that the supporters actually make excuses for them. They're a kind of... abused partner. It's like, yeah, but he may be like that, but, you know, he's like this. And so Boris Johnson, he may be look a bit daft, and he may have messed up hair, but, and of course, you know, these politicians who are at the top of their game, it's all an act. I mean, it is a very, very good act. It's like a kind of method act where they have honed this character to such perfection that it works for them, and every time they get the character right, they get more votes, and people like to be entertained. So there's something like that. So there's always been a connection between entertainment and politics, and these guys have been able to make that link between entertainment and politics. They look like a comedian off the stage, but actually they're politicians. And actually, if you look at Trump's rallies, it's like the way he delivers it to his own fans, in the audience. It's like a stand-up comedy act, but without any jokes.
<It's> just, or maybe there are jokes, but they're not funny.
He's got the timing. He's got the confidence of a
facial
stand-up
expressions.
Comedian.
Yeah,
the
that's
whole
it,
thing.
That rapport.
But there isn't actually any comedy material in there. But it's all there. If he had some good jokes, you know, if he had a comedy writer, he could be quite
he could
a good stand-up
good,
comedian.
He?
Yeah,
so maybe he is. Maybe he's just a deeply, even further ironic sort of version of a Borat character.
I was thinking he could be one of those right-wing comedians that the BBC is told that they need to have on their panel shows. So
I'm more of the opinion he's a left-wing comedian. Who's just gone into absolute the deepest possible irony, and this is if you look at it like that, it's a little bit less painful actually in some ways.
Yeah.
But anyway, my interesting question on this is a lot of this stuff does seem to come from the right hand side of the spectrum. So yeah. I mean, why is it over on that side? What is it about? Is it the people that tend to get, or have we mixed it up? Have we mixed up something about populism with the right that doesn't necessarily properly belong there?
I think, let's have a look at it. I mean, what is left-wing politics? What is right-wing politics? I mean, I guess, you tell me, but right-wing politics, I always thought was really about people, individuals getting on in the world.
Economic and to some extent economic freedom with social conservatism seems to be the shape of the right, doesn't it?
But I think there's a kind of libertarian thing as well going on where people, they want to be free, they want low taxes, they want to make, if they work hard, have a business, make money, they don't want to be paying a load of taxes because that's their money that they made that.
Yeah, and so that economic freedom.
And if they want to spend that money on
hookers and cocaine,
the children, they can do that. It's their right to. Left wing is more community. Let's protect the weak. Let's put in a little bit based on what we earn. And with that money, you know, we've got a good state that can look after the weak. And that's why we've got the NHS, that kind of thing. So that, roughly speaking, is the difference between left and right. With the left, though, there's a degree of organisation required, isn't there? A degree of community, a degree of intelligence required, an empathy in order to do that.
It's quite complicated, isn't it?
With the, getting back to your point about fake news and conspiracy theories, I mean, conspiracy theories have always been around. Growing up, we always thought there were aliens in Area 51. It comes up in that film Independence Day. I don't know if you've seen that film, Stuart.
I haven't. But I do know about the aliens in Area 51, because it's been on The Simpsons. So,
well,
you
know,
that's
there you
my
go.
Well, it's of popular culture.
It's been there since the 50s in America, and it's kind of seeped out over here. So let's take that one as a kind of modern conspiracy.
The flat earthers have come back as well, John.
Flat earthers have come back. But what's happened is, I think the right wing have been able to... So really, the idea between a conspiracy is there's something secret that they, whoever they are, don't want you to know about. And it's all been hushed up. It's just, and they don't want you to know. I remember there was a lookalike Pope... that Pope John Paul, was it Pope Paul, didn't die? He did die, and he was replaced by a lookalike Pope.
So that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, so the conspiracy theory, to some extent, relies on the idea that the fact that they don't want you to know means that you can't generally find out. So, you know, it's actually a higher level of evidence to prove that he died.
Yeah, well, he'd just tweeted, if he'd
disappeared. Yeah,
yeah.
Right. So that's the point. So the fact that they've replaced him with such a cunning lookalike, you know, who operates in exactly the same way as well as that actually proves it, doesn't it? That's the idea of the conspiracy theory, right? Lack of proof just shows how deep it runs.
So why are the right? I think the right wing maybe they're just the first politicians to seize upon it. I think people realise in the right wing in order to get elected in a democracy, they have to be able to get a load of votes. And I guess people who are more into conspiracy theories, that's their target market. So all they have to do is tell a lie often enough, convincingly enough.
But they tailor it to people's concerns, don't they? So that's one thing. You say it's the right wing. So if you've got this idea that freedom is very, very important.
Yes. That's a libertarian right wing.
Yeah, so it's that libertarian freedom thing. And if somebody persuades you that you've got freedom of thought and this is how you show it, is by thinking differently to the sheep, then you go, oh, wow, I am incredibly free here. I'm thinking in a different way, a different plane to everybody else. So I suppose on that basis, then that is appealing to those people that have got that libertarian, freedom-loving type thing. Because if you persuade them that what everybody else is thinking is the same, I think that maybe people are less concerned about whether they're wrong. They're actually just want to be free. So even free of correct thought. If everybody's thinking that, even if it's right, you know, the idea of freedom is, well, I want the freedom to jump off this cliff and die, you know, just because everybody else has stood there being safe.
Yes.
People do like idea, I think.
Yeah, that's true. It's like that line in the Morrissey song, it's my life to wreck and ruin my own way. That they've got, you should have the freedom. If you want to jump off a cliff, you should be allowed to.
So that idea of something a bit different and that you're they are purveying it as, you know, an idea of free thinking. And just that word free alone, they've attached it. Oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah, and what they've done is they've been able to seize control of the English language and weaponise it. And I guess they do that using focus groups. And I don't think, especially in the UK, don't think the left have been able to weaponise English language in the way maybe they used to. I just don't think they're good enough. I don't think they can come up with clever sayings and slogans that they can test out on people. Here's a phrase that's now passed into the language. The trick is to come up with a phrase, a saying that once said passes into the language. So like the phrase health and safety gone mad, that's a great one, isn't it? That's kind of passed into the language. But if you went to anyone up in the street and said, finish off this phrase health and safety, and they always say gone mad, because, well, they might look at you and go, I don't know what you mean, but health and safety gone mad, like blankety blank, the Terry Wogan says.
That would definitely be the top scoring
health
mark,
and safety,
you've lost 70% of any likely audience with that reference to Terry Wogan and blankety blank.
Exactly. So
I think we'll have to aim this at the boomers, John.
Health and safety so health and safety gone mad. Here's another one, nanny state. Now that's a cracking one.
That's a good state. One, isn't it? Yeah.
Now the thing about nanny state, I mean, how many people have had nannies? I mean, it's a vanishingly small number. Most people did not grow up with a nanny looking after them.
Apart from Jacob Rees-Mogg, you're on pretty thin ground.
Well, Jacob Rees-Mogg's a good example. And like anybody who had a nanny, you know, Jacob Rees-Mogg or Sebastian Flight out of Brideshead Revisited, those kind of characters.
But they love them. They love their
nannies. They love their nanny.
And now they're criticising them.
So they wouldn't criticise them and call them a nanny state. Nanny state's a paradise as far as those people are concerned.
Yeah,
so really, it's not even... just an expression that has...
I'd love a state that made me a crumpet and a cup of tea at 4 o'clock. That would be fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. And Cecil Cecil Beaton, the celebrated photographer, he got into photography because of his nanny. His nanny taught him how to photograph. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for nannies if you can get one. But a nanny state, that's a criticism. And it is... It sounds to me the kind of term that was coined and given to a focus group who all agreed this was a bad thing, and suddenly the writer using it is a criticism of the left. We all go on about how great the NHS is, but the NHS is really part of a nanny state, and the right want to get rid of it, but they can't get rid of it because it's so popular.
So the right seem to have the ability to such an extent they can take a really crap phrase like win back our sovereignty.
Yeah.
You know, which nobody knows what it means, and it's not even very good, and they've won with that. Whereas I think the last phrase the left had that was popular was, and back to the boomer audience again, I think was Citizen Smith saying power to the people. There's been very little since then.
You're right. They've not been able, the defence of the European Union has been very, very bad. But yeah, the right have.
I thought
the
Jeremy
best.
Corbyn's actually it was a brilliant defence of the European Union. I'd give it about 7 out of 10. I don't know about you, but I wasn't brilliant at school or in any other level of education, despite the fact that I've got quite a few certificates. I would say that if I got 7 out of 10 in anything, I was 70%. Get a first class honours degree at university with 70%. He gave him 7 out of 10. I thought that was brilliant.
That's true, but you're kind of thinking about it when really.
Oh, the idea of that. All right, now you've got
a rallying cry. How much should we give the European Union? 7 out of 10. I think you've got people marching down the street.
You've definitely got us to the point there, though, John. So the trick of this language use that you're talking about is it's got to be something that you don't think about, something that's so sticky that you don't even have to think about it, right?
Yeah.
And if you think about it, it kind of just evaporates with the...
It's got to be so good that it passes into the language. Like Salman Rushdie's greatest work, which was, of course, the catchphrase for British cream. Naughty but nice. But the left have got to come up with some catchphrases that summing up a policy in a way that works for them. So there were loads of catchphrases that were marketed at the time to stay in the European Union, but they just weren't selected. The agencies that came up with them were told no. And they went with inferior terms and phrases. So Brexiteers, that's a cracking term. Brexiteers, it sounds like musketeers. It's
very strong,
dashing.
Isn't it? Yeah, dandy.
Whereas
even.
Remainers sounds, you know, sounds very
dull.
Yeah. Dull.
Old-fashioned. Just
unadventurous.
The same old thing, right?
Very unadventurous word, Remain.
Who wants the same old thing?
And you've got to be in it to win it, you're better off in. Those kind of phrases just weren't ever used. Not that those are particularly good, but they're better than remain. it's just an awful remain. Word. The difficulty with the left is you do have to think about things. Education takes a bit of time. People need to sum it up. And I think with what the left need to do is, when I say left, I mean people who want to counter the idea of they have got a secret that they don't want you to know about, Area 51 and the moon landings were faked and all that kind of stuff, and there's a conspiracy in counting elections. I think what I'm getting at is, I'll call it the Play It Again, Sam conspiracy. So Play It Again, Sam. Everybody knows Play It Again, Sam, that phrase. You know that, mm-hmm. Don't you? Play It Again, Sam. What film's it from?
Well, I do know this. It's allegedly from Casablanca, but of course they say that Bogart never said it.
They say that, don't they?
You know, they do. Sources.
They do.
Sources.
Sources say. Well, there you are. Now, that's a reverse, what I call a reverse conspiracy, in that everyone says Play It Again, Sam, and they all know it's from Casablanca, but you're right. It was never said in the film. It's a conspiracy. However, it's easily proven. You just have to watch Casablanca. That's all you've got to do. And you can watch it. Now, do people have time to watch Casablanca anymore? I don't know. But I guess...
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point, John, because if you watch the 90-second or 35-second clip on YouTube, mm-hmm. where you're proving that Bogart doesn't say that, you can't prove that Bogart doesn't say that with a 35-second clip, because the immediate rejoinder is, well, you've just shown us a 35-second clip where Bogart didn't say that. You haven't proved to us that Bogart didn't say that. And that's what I always say is the difference between the evidence of the lack of something and a lack of evidence for something. All you've given me is a lack of evidence for your fact that he doesn't
say
it.
That's true. That is true.
You've got to show that I can only sit down and watch the whole film in order to know that he doesn't say it.
Well,
you can't prove it to me.
That's what I was going to say.
Under the conditions that we currently operate in, which is it's got to be less than 20 seconds.
Yes, you can make the point. You can make the point. In order to disprove this conspiracy theory about Play It Again, Sam, you have to invest time watching the film. And if you watch the film...
And not fall asleep.
And not fall asleep. It's a cracking film and you won't fall asleep. It's very entertaining. But what it will give you is an understanding that conspiracy theories are easily generated and difficult to disprove. And the Play It Again, Sam is an example of that. And what the left need to do after that is find ways of things that we think are true and being able to quickly disprove them. Mm-hmm. And also they need to take control of the language and have snappy phrases like nanny state. They need to have that
on
in their armory.
Side. Yeah.
Because you can't argue against nanny state. Once you start saying it's not a nanny state, you're still talking about the nanny state.
Yeah.
You need to come up with a phrase that sounds good and get the right to argue against your term that you've just invented. And then they're talking about you. What the left seem to do is they're quite happy to talk about the right. The right can talk about the right. The left can talk about the right. Everybody's talking about the right. Mm-hmm. It's not
Oscar
good.
Wilde would have been proud, wouldn't he?
If you can't be famous, be infamous.
So, as a retired physicist, John, just to close off for me, because I've often wondered about, how do you prove that the Earth isn't flat?
Well, you can go into space. I hear
Tom
Cruise is going to make his next movie on the International Space Station or something, or with SpaceX. Now he's going to make a Mission Impossible scene where he's actually in space.
But then you can prove that it's round, but not necessarily spherical, right?
Yeah.
And I suppose you travel round it, I suppose.
And we need to get a flat earther on. I mean, what? I don't know too much about the flat earth hypothesis, but it's...
I want to get a round earther on, John. I want to know their arguments for it. Well, because I know full well the earth is round.
What about
spherical.
The moon? Is the moon flat as well, or is the moon spherical?
No, but it's very tasty, isn't it?
I think anyone who's a flat earther, they should join the Navy and go into firing missiles because that will teach them why the world must be spherical, apart from everybody laughing at you if you ever mention that.
But
nothing
the fact
works.
Remains that it's, yeah, but the fact remains that it is tricky, though, isn't it? I mean, I can
no,
just
not
look
really.
And go,
I mean, well, Coriolis forces is something. Coriolis forces only exist... If you have you're going around on a sphere, I'm sure the flat earthers will have an.
You've lost me though, John. Though you see already, you know, and a bit of my garden.
Coriolis forces.
It's flat, you see, so it's just.
Well, you know, when you fire, if you fire a missile off a ship, or anywhere actually, if you fire it far enough, for long enough, the Earth is moving, and so that there's going to be a. It's going to move away. That it'll appear that very slightly the
doesn't go in a straight line. Yeah.
It's not going in a straight line because the Earth is moving underneath it. And so,
but that's a great argument, John. But you know, the flat Earth argument is you look out the window and it's blindingly obvious that you know the Earth is flat, and you have to go into a lot. And that's your point, right? So they need to, you know.
Well, it can't be flat because when you look out to sea, if you're in Liverpool or wherever. You look out the sea to Ireland. You can't see Ireland because it's over the edge of the sea. So
it's a long way away. I mean, you're not seeing Father Ted, you know. It's like the further away something. Ireland, seen from Liverpool, is only about as big as, you know, sort of a Lego brick somewhere on the other side of the room. So you can't see it because it's always foggy anyway. You know, you haven't bought me with that one. You're going to have to do harder than that.
I just don't know. I don't know. I really don't know. I think the thing is, it's with flat Earth. There's a feel. They've got a feeling, and they're trying to make the facts support the feeling, the belief. So they're making bending facts to support the belief, whereas scientists, the scientific method, I suppose, in a way, is you make you let the facts tell you what to believe.
But then
so
you're
you
back to the
things.
Individualist and the collective. So scientific. Method followed by your belief in science is an entirely anti-individualist stance. Science has to be, well, generally science these days has to be done by a collective. And if you are then accepting scientific theory, you are very much not being an individualist. You're accepting other people's truths based on some meta system. Whereas if you are just taking the only things that you observe, the only things that you as an individual can understand, that individualist perspective will lead you towards looking out the window and potentially believing the earth is flat. And that's an individualist perspective then are more associated with the right, as you've already said, and collective ideas are associated with the left. So maybe you've just proved that the left is more likely to listen to experts and science and collectively created but more reliable truths, whereas someone from the right would be more individualist and they're more likely to want to and be inclined to trust their own observation, which because of limitations is wrong. So maybe we'll never beat them with other people's facts. You've got to find that route to say, look, you can see it. Just you with your own individual atomized person. If you can't prove it to them in that way, maybe you'll never turn anyone.
I'm sure there's some very intelligent people who vote for Donald Trump for their own reasons. But even those very intelligent people must see that a lot of people vote for somebody like Donald Trump because they're misguided.
Yeah.
They really don't know.
It's not in their interest. Great. They've just been made to think it's in their interest. And you can't. It's hard to criticise someone that votes for Trump or anybody else when it's in their interest. You kind of have to be hugely altruistic to go against that. And I'm not saying people shouldn't be. I mean, my personal belief is people should be. My belief is I should be. I'm not all the time. Well, but it's hard to argue against it, though, is the point. Whereas arguing against the fact that somebody's voting for Trump because they've misunderstood or they've been convinced by somebody that it's in their interest when it probably isn't.
It's the hot-head thing, isn't it? I mean, it's like Brexit and Trump. So Brexit, everybody who's done any research would say that it's not in the country's interest to have Brexit happen. It's not in individuals' interest to have Brexit happen. They'll be worse off with Brexit. But the people who vote for Brexit want some kind of freedom. They voted.
They want a feeling.
They want to
too.
Shake it up.
And they want to feel they're masters of their own destiny, right?
They want to feel good about it. And what they've done is the value they've applied to pro-Brexit is much higher than any loss that they may make. I mean, if they're on very low wages anyway or don't have a job, they've got nothing to lose, have
exactly.
they?
Exactly. I think you've just really totally convinced them. Me, totally convinced me, John, to get pissed this lunchtime. I think that's that is pretty much the argument, is we all do things that we know aren't good for us in any logical, rational, whatever sense. But we think, screw it, let's do it, let's live a bit, let's do it anyway. Let's have something we actually want for a change rather than something we should have or something that will do us good. I think that the more people fall on comparative hard times, let's just give ourselves something we can have that's free for you, as you say, so let's do it. We can't be together, but maybe we can get pissed at lunchtime separately.
Maybe we can.